In the kingdom of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. In the kingdom of the paranoid, the one-eyed man is a spy. This is Paranoid Planet.
I welcome this kind of examination because people have got to know whether or not their president is a crook. Well, I'm not a crook.
Esta nunca ha sido dictadura, señores. Esta es dicta blanda.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
I don't like them putting chemicals in the water that turn the friggin' frogs gay.
I'm not gonna give you a question. You are fake news.
Silent Green is people!
Welcome back to Part B of Episode 8 of the Paranoid Planet Podcast. If you're a regular listener and you didn't listen to Part A yet, then you know the drill. If you're not and you don't, then the drill is probably just another power tool that you keep locked away in your creepy garage and has nothing to do with any of the contents of this program. In that case, just do whatever you usually do when you show up uninvited in the middle of someone else's conversation. Unless, of course, it involves a drill, or hedge clippers, a 65cc gas-powered chainsaw, or an over-sharpened Swiss Army knife. Chapter 2, The Gaston Commission.
You have this new storytelling podcast here about the JFK assassination. Tomorrow's actually 60 years since he was assassinated. Your thoughts on Kennedy, why this matters now, and what you're doing with this podcast, Rob?
Well, the first thing you have to understand is that those of us who were alive and conscious during that time will never, ever forget where we were when we heard that news. Live television, we saw the man who was accused of killing Kennedy himself get murdered. And I saw that happen. It was a collective trauma for the entire nation. And if you were alive then, that never goes away. And it was the first time in our nation's history where we as a people started questioning whether or not the government was telling us the truth. Up until then, we were the heroes. We won the Second World War. We were the good guys. And then we believed everything the government told us. Then the Warren Commission report came out, and there were some people saying, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. None of this makes sense. And when we started to question, things fell apart. And what we did is we took all the information that we've accumulated over 60 years and put it in one place for people to understand what actually happened on that day. And by the 10th episode, you will have a complete picture. It was definitely conspiracy. There's no question about that. Who actually shot? We have a good guess as to who they were based on all the research.
Okay, so the Warren Commission is, of course, the commission that concluded that Lee Harvey Oswald alone killed Kennedy. This is something that I did not accept for many years, but I came to accept eventually. As I say in my book, it's not the answer I wanted, but it was the only one that I could prove when I actually looked objectively at the science and the evidence. Now, I don't know if I talked about this with you, Sean, but I also had a listener who emailed me last week or 2 weeks ago and asked me if I'd listen to the Rob Reiner podcast, right? There's always something new, you know, when if it's not Oliver Stone, it's Jesse Ventura or whatever. Rob Reiner, Meathead from All in the Family. he made the greatest mockumentary ever, right? Spinal Tap. He, of course, like many people in Hollywood, is an avid JFK buff and an ardent believer that the CIA, the military industrial complex, whatever, all of those kind of conservative-ish agencies conspired to kill basically Messiah number two, you know, the Prince of Peace, John F. Kennedy. So did you listen to the Rob Reiner podcast? To my shame, or maybe not, I haven't yet, but I probably will eventually. What did you have to think about that?
I found it, if I had to describe it in one word, grating. it grated on my nerves, because the more I read about the Kennedy assassination, the more solid my foundational belief that it was Lee Harvey Oswald and only Lee Harvey Oswald, it becomes more concrete. And I find myself having very little patience for ignorance. And it's a willful ignorance. And it's like one of these questions that I constantly ask: why are the people that have the biggest microphones sometimes the most ignorant about a certain topic? And some of the things that he talks about in that podcast, they've been debunked. And they've been debunked for years. And there's nobody standing there. Soledad O'Brien, she tries, okay? I want to give it to her, you know, for
she was the, was it a CNN reporter who followed him around for this?
She is supposed to be like the everyday person, the voice of reason kind of thing, and questioning Rob. But I don't think that she had a good enough background in the Kennedy assassination to really push him. Because as I'm driving to work in the morning and I'm listening to Rob Reiner babble on, and I mean, that guy has made some of my favorite movies, like American President. I love that movie, you know, and I'm sitting there thinking to myself, you know, she's the wrong person to push back. Just like when Oliver Stone sits in front of Joe Rogan, he's the wrong person, you know, to push back. He's not going to challenge this person. And she does her best, but it's not like you sitting in front of him, you know, asking him these questions. It's not like me sitting in front of him asking these questions, because he'll have no explanation, you know, for the questions that we're asking. You know, all those roads lead to one conclusion. And so he'll sit there and he'll throw conspiracy theories that have been debunked for years out. And it's kind of funny, because the whole thing like builds to, you know, the final episode where Rob Reiner's gonna name names, you know, and it's a letdown, you know, because it's not like he names a name and here's the proof, you know, and this is what's in the documents that the government's hiding. I'd be interested to hear what you think about it, but it really grated on my nerves. It did not grate on my nerves, I will tell you this, as bad as Oliver Stone's Through the Looking Glass. I don't know if you've watched like the 2-hour version or the 4-hour version.
I watched a short version. I read Fred Litwin's assessment of the longer version, because I know Fred. Yes. And I'd seen enough of the short version, and he told me it's more the same. You know, it's a lot more the same. There wasn't much more enlightenment to get from the full 4 hours.
What I if I could give you a visual representation of what watching JFK Through the Looking Glass was like, it's like Oliver Stone is a firefighter. And he's standing there holding a hose, and it's one of those tanker trucks, you know, that they drive in to put out a fire in like a remote location. But instead of water inside of that truck, it's bullshit. Okay. And when that movie starts, he turns on that fire hose and he just sprays you. And you have to stand there and you have to take it. And you're standing there being fire hosed by this bullshit and you have no recourse. I mean, that's what I felt like literally 2 minutes after he starts talking.
So do you think...
It's Whoopi Goldberg.
So do you think I should actually listen to it and write a review?
Well, you can write a review, but your review's going to be, you know, Vincent Bugliosi's Reclaiming History too, because you know as well as I do, like if you let a guy like Oliver Stone talk for 5 minutes, you're going to spend 50 pages trying to rebut everything that he said in that 5 minutes. You can't have a conversation with a guy like him from a genuine place, because he does not want to have a genuine conversation. Like, he will not define terms. He can't tell you what happened or what he thinks happened in Dealey Plaza on November 22nd, 1963. In his last interview with Joe Rogan, Joe Rogan asked him what he thought happened. And I'm like, great, good question, Joe. You know, and you know what Oliver Stone said? He said, I don't know. And I'm like, but yet you're making movies about this? Mm-hmm. Like, shame on you.
That's the same thing Jesse Ventura told James Lambert at Dealey Plaza when he interviewed him. I had James Lambert on the show. Yeah.
Yeah.
But guys, you think that this is could be for both guys, Jesse Ventura and Oliver Stone, could be their trauma for going to war? They came back totally against the system, against, you know?
Yeah, I think so. Jonathan Kay, who was on our show, Canadian journalist, he's an editor at Quillette.
The truthers?
He wrote that book, and he interviewed a lot of these guys one-on-one, and he had a phrase for them. The damaged survivor.
Yeah.
And so he used the example of Jenny McCarthy because she had struggled with her child having autism. So she was looking for a reason to blame, someone to blame for the autism. And I do believe that Oliver Stone fits in that category. The trauma that he experienced in Vietnam, but also he went to Vietnam to spite his father. So there were family issues and war issues and political issues. He came back, he got drug issues. All of these things make all of the 1960s a kind of a travesty for him, and he needs to have an explanation. And he finds it in blaming the Vietnam War on the military-industrial complex.
So it's a way of coping.
What it is is it's a problem, you know, that they have, and then what they do is they search for cause, you know, for said problem. Or he gets caught up in this. His death, you know, had to mean something. I could sit here and rattle off a whole bunch of things about JFK that destroy that whole idea of Camelot. You know, he was not this messiah figure. He just wasn't. People search for meaning in Kennedy's death. One of the greatest things, I forget who said it, you know, was they want the cause of the event to have an equal meaning behind it. And the analogy that they use is if you have a scale and you put 6 million dead Jews on one side of the scale, what's going to make that scale balance out? The Nazi regime. Okay? Well, but when you have this Kennedy myth, this idea of Camelot and the Knights of the Round Table and, you know, our ideal or the closest thing that our country's ever going to get to a royal family, you know, on one side of the scale, and then you put Lee Harvey Oswald, I think the quote is this wretched, you know, waif.
Wretched waif. That's what William Manchester called him, yeah.
Yes, this wretched waif on the other side of the scale, this does not balance. So what makes that scale balance? A whole bunch of bullshit. Yeah, okay.
I actually believe that in the case of the Holocaust, I mean, 6 million Jews were killed. I mean, this is horrid. In the case of Kennedy, yes, he got killed. Yes, he was a popular politician, but entire mythology was built up around him. He does become, not because of the conspiracists, because of Jackie Kennedy, because of Earl Warren.
You're exactly right.
Because a lot of people who admired Kennedy, they made him out to be a hero, almost a messiah figure. And how do you kill the messiah except with the devil? You need a Satan to kill Jesus. You need a war machine to kill the Prince of Peace.
No, exactly.
It balances out the myth.
Yeah, you need it all. And, you know, if you want me to spoil Rob Reiner's...
I have a good idea where it ends, but sure, go ahead.
Yeah, he's going along those lines. He can't name names. I mean, he sits there and he just rehashes. It's the CIA and the mafia, and, like, he just starts naming all these people, and there's this, you know, I think there's four of them or whatever, you know, but he just picks the top four groups, you know, that are, you know, the who's who, the Billboard top four that have been blamed for the Kennedy assassination, and he just, you know, spouts those things off, and it's like, did we really have to sit here for, you know, I don't know how many episodes it was, 8, 9, 10, I have no idea. I know that it's like 10 hours of my life that I'm never going to get back. It's so sad. But getting back to that stuff that you were talking about, Jackie Kennedy, I mean, in the first hours after, you know, when she finds out that it's Lee Harvey Oswald and he is this communist sympathizer, Jackie's comment was he didn't even get to die for, you know, something like civil rights. You know, and it's like, what the hell does that mean?
It had to be a silly little communist.
Yeah, it had to be a silly little communist, you know, and then, you know, she plans this funeral for him and ties him to Lincoln by doing all of this, you know, stuff that was done in his funeral. And like I said, I mean, that guy led us through a civil war that the predominant issue, you know, was slavery. He died and was shot, you know, by a man who wanted slavery. So, you know, Lincoln, you know, fits that bill. Kennedy did not.
Did you know that Lee Harvey Oswald's father was actually called Robert Edward Lee Oswald? So he was actually named after Robert E. Lee.
I think I read that in your book, right?
Yeah, and I finished my course with this because it's a great, you can use a picture. Kennedy's last resting place, his tomb in Arlington Cemetery, is overshadowed by a building atop of the hill, which used to be Robert E. Lee House, his mansion, before the Civil War. So even in the, you can see like shadows of Lincoln, the Civil War, and of Kennedy's murderer in the building that looms above. It's all very symbolic. It's kind of interesting.
The only shot of Kennedy's grave that I use in my class is the drone shot from directly above Kennedy's grave because the path makes the letter Q.
Oh.
So I bring that up when we talk about QAnon because that's all it takes is that.
I had a listener who emailed me last week who's actually a local. I haven't met him, but he lives in Montreal, and he told me that he never got into the conspiracy theories, although he's a JFK buff, because one of the first books he read was that big fat book by Vincent Bugliosi, which is Reclaiming History.
Yes.
And I said, I admire you. I mean, I still haven't read all of Bugliosi's book because it is so voluminous and it has that CD-ROM with like 1,000 pages of footnotes. But even that, when I was a conspiracy believer, some people had told me, and I forget which ones, I was listening to podcasts and books and online forums, that this book was actually shadow written by CIA agents. And stupid me, I believed it because it's the kind of language that when you're in a... what do you call those things? Like an echo chamber, then you don't really have any ways to find a contrary viewpoint to that. So it makes sense because everybody's saying, oh, it was shadow written by the CIA. Vincent Bugliosi didn't even write the book. And like, I mean, eventually I came to believe that's ridiculous. But it's funny how we make up our minds of sources, and we might talk about the Warren Commission report later on. Before we even read them, other people tell us what we should or shouldn't think about them.
Yeah, what I find is I've been doing a lot of reading and research about the Dunning-Kruger effect, and I'm finding that it's very difficult to overcome the Dunning-Kruger effect. And I know you're past, just from listening to the podcast, that you were a 9/11 truther. Is that fair to say?
Yes, I was. And I think Joanne was as well. Joanne and I went to see Richard Gage and David Ray Griffin, a lot of these guys speaking at engagements. And I remember the second time we went, this is where we kind of, I don't think we had an argument, but that's where I kind of given up. I thought Richard Gage was full of crap. But I think Joanne still thought, you know what? I don't know, man. It sounds genuine. I don't know where he's, Joanne, where do you stand on 9/11 now?
Yeah, but a little bit of background. My issue is that I know what the government of the U.S. is capable of because they did it in my country. You see, conspiracy-wise, you see, you start paying, letting the CIA go. It's like two presidents before Allende, you know, to try to take up. But this is Kissinger, pretty much, is the one that got this like, beautiful idea of trying to remove every socialist from the face of South America.
But giving money to a dictator is a little simpler than driving planes into buildings and having bombs.
Yeah,
and,
but you can do it outside. Nanothermite. It's really easy to do it inside.
Okay.
Plus, the echo chamber thing. You know, people think, okay, you know, it never happens to us because we live in a bubble. The world doesn't... It's not important. If you ask kids that other parts of the world in the U.S., people don't have a clue. or capitals of other countries. So it's like, okay, you live in a perfect world kind of thing, the American dream. And suddenly this thing is like wakes you up. What is going on? Why they're attacking us? So that kind of reaction, I was like totally blown away. Really? You don't know why? It's like that's why I think it's kind of, I felt like a mixed emotions because like, okay, could be that people are paying off, like, okay, you know what? You do this to us and okay, and we're attacking you. Okay, well, one thing. But then you start seeing, the World Trade Center 7 coming down. Why? I'm still not clear why. And the way that it felt, so many kind of because the towers, obviously, you understand, they got pretty much hit. But little things that start kind of not making sense to me, man. Then.
Okay, well, we'll have to do a couple shows on that. I think I actually changed my mind, and I think there are simple answers. But
Sure.
let's put a hyphen or what do you call that? We put a close a parenthesis.
Put a pin in it,
and then we'll come back to this in the future, Sean. So the answer is, yeah, I'm no longer a 9/11 truther, but I think I'm still working on Juwan on that one.
So with the Kennedy assassination, were you a conspiracy believer with Kennedy and then ended up switching as well?
Yeah, I don't remember when it was a switch. I mean, I saw JFK, Oliver Stone's JFK in 91, but I don't think like I took a deep dive right away. It was an accumulation of things. I do distinctly remember one of my college friends who was in the reserves, he was in the Army reserves, and he was going to get shipped out to the first Gulf War. And I think that's when I started realizing, hey, these things that are happening in the Middle East, they're happening to my friends. They're happening here and now as well. And I was studying political science. I'd heard some shenanigans that Bush one, George Herbert Walker Bush had done to try to sell the attack on Panama, claiming that there was like satanic red pajamas, these sorts of things, and that in Iraq there were stories about babies thrown out of incubators by Iraqi soldiers. And it was very hard to know what to believe in all of that. And I think little by little my suspicions grew. And then eventually around 95, 96, I don't know what it was, but I started reading about Kennedy voraciously, and I think I went kind of deep into the rabbit hole. To the point that, I mean, I've said this, I think, when I was interviewed by Michael Shermer, to the point that I was engaged to be married. My wife, we've been together for over 20 years now. And I remember telling her, I don't know if I want to get married right now because it's going to prevent me from actually kind of engaging in this search for the truth. And I realized that it was destroying my relationships, right? And that was, I think, maybe one of the first things that started me ma realizing that even if this is true, it's not healthy. And then eventually, I think when my brother came to see me, he said, it wasn't a missile that hit the Pentagon, it was a plane. I'm like, no, it's got to be a missile. But I started reading some of the stuff he had shared with me. So 9/11 went away first, and then Kennedy, which I think was much deeper ingrained, it had to be worked at. And the solution, or what happened, the not the magic bullet. Well, in fact, it was the magic bullet. It's when I finally read the Warren Commission, I realized there's nothing in the Warren Commission that suggests it was a zigzagging bullet or anything that could be construed as a zigzagging bullet. It actually made a lot of sense scientifically the way they explained it, but Oliver Stone had to lie and reconstruct this whole idea of a zigzagging bullet to try to sell his story. That's where I felt betrayed. So
Yeah.
2011 is kind of that part where I lost my religion, so to speak. I lost my faith in Oliver Stone.
See, for me, it was just the JFK assassination. That was the rabbit hole that I was in. I don't think for a second I bought any of the 9/11 conspiracy theories. I mean, there were obviously questions, what brought down World Trade Center 7, and NIST was researching. Well, let them research, let's wait for, the report. And it just so happens everybody was clamoring for the 9/11 report. The NIST report wasn't out yet, so they don't even mention World Trade Center 7 in the 9/11 commission report. But I think patience is something that all conspiracy theorists lack. They want the answer and they want it immediately. And that's why, I mean, I teach my students this about how conspiracy theories are usually born out of this time of chaos. And you see this, you know, when a president's assassinated, when, you know, planes hit buildings and there's a terrorist attack, when there's a school shooting, you know, they want to call it a false flag. I mean, the media got so much wrong about Sandy Hook the day of the event. And that birthed a lot of conspiracy theories that Alex Jones, you know, was screaming about for the next 10 years. I mean, but for me with the Kennedy assassination, I used it as a way to bond with my father. He was reading Robert Grodin's High Treason, and he got up one day to answer the telephone, and he sat the book down on the arm of the chair, and I was in middle school, and I picked the book up and went immediately to the photos in the middle of the book, and there's these autopsy pictures, and, you know, with, you know, his brain matter in his
hair. The ones that he stole, right? The ones he stole.
Yes, the ones that he stole, but I didn't know that then, you know, and I'm looking at these pictures and I'm reading these captions and my father comes back and he asked me, you know, what I thought about the book and the pictures. And I asked him if I could read this book, you know, when he was done. And I'm in middle school and he let me read High Treason. And it was the first, you know, adult themed book. And I thought it was the coolest thing. Like, we had baseball and stuff like that to bond with. I mean, he was a baseball coach and played baseball, and, you know, I was really good at baseball, and that was the thing that we bonded over. But then here's this, you know, highbrow intellectual conversation now that I can have with my father reading High Treason. And my father would tell me these stories. Like, I still think my father to this day believes that when a new president is elected, the first day he shows up in the Oval Office, some men in black take him into a back room and they show him the 26-second film of the Kennedy assassination and they ask him if he has any questions. And I'm like, you really do not believe that this is what goes on, do you? And I can't answer that he doesn't. And he's been steeped in Kennedy, you know, conspiracy theories. And then for me in college, I watched Peter Jennings' ABC special, you know, that he did, the Kennedy assassination, like Beyond Conspiracy or something like that. And as I was watching the show, I remember thinking to myself, holy crap, there's another side to this story. And then that's when I met Dale Myers, you know, through watching that show. And his 3D animation of where he overlaid his stuff with the Zapruder film was just amazing. And it blew me away. And I tried to show it to my father, and he was completely, again, the echo chamber. I was talking about things that were outside of that echo chamber, and he didn't want to listen to it. And he doesn't talk to me about the Kennedy
assassin. Well, you're a heretic. You know, you're going to poison the faith in a sense. I mean, and a lot of times I think it comes down to being kind of like a faith.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
All right. Before we move on, one last question here. Why teach JFK to teenagers? Why does it matter that people who are 17, 18, 19 years old learn who killed Kennedy?
So I do it because I look at this issue as the, if you had, like, let's picture this bullshit mountain, okay? If we put Mount Rushmore, okay, on bullshit mountain, the Kennedy assassination is George Washington, okay? So if you're gonna teach conspiracy theories, it's very difficult to teach critical thinking. It's very difficult to teach a course like conspiracy theories without addressing that conspiracy. Alex Jones said it. It all started for him on November 22nd in 1963 in Dealey Plaza.
He wasn't born yet.
Which is hilarious.
He's younger than I am.
Which is hilarious. You know, and I point that out to my students. I'm like, I don't know how that started for him there, you know, but I guess in the same sense, that's where all of this started for me, you know, with connecting with my father, you know, with this topic. So in that sense, you know, I can relate, you know, to what he's talking about. But I think that in order to teach these kids this, you need to start there. I listen to a lot of independent media, and it drives me absolutely insane. Some of these people who I value their opinions when it comes to looking at things like what's taking place in Israel right now, they will, in Gaza, They tell you the stuff that the mainstream news media is not telling you. And the crazy thing is they stand there, or they'll sit there and they'll do these podcasts and these broadcasts where they're telling you the importance of critical thinking, the importance of, you know, having evidence, the importance starting with the evidence and letting it lead you to a conclusion and not starting with a conclusion and working backwards, you know, to confirm a bias, you know, that you already have. But then in the same respect, they'll be like, unless we're talking about the JFK assassination, it's like for them, it's like, I'm going to be this critical thinker over here, but I wholeheartedly believe in all these JFK conspiracies. And I scream, you know, in my car when I listen to these people talk, like, and then they'll have Oliver Stone on and literally no pushback. It's like they sit there and they fanboy. You know, I'd love to have a beer with Oliver Stone, and I don't even drink beer.
Not to spill on him.
Not to spill on him at all. No, I mean, I'd probably like to have a conversation. I think the conversation with Alex Jones, I think I know exactly how it would go. I honestly don't think that he believes the things that he believes. I think that he is playing a character, and it's all a big, you know, money-making scheme.
Yeah.
It's fear and consumption. Let's make people afraid of stuff so that they come to my, you know, website and buy stuff.
Exactly.
Chapter 3. What are you doing, Dave?
Do you read me, Hal?
Hello, Hal, do you read me?
Hello, Hal, do you read me? Do you read me, Hal?
Affirmative, Dave. I read you.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
What's the problem?
I think you know what the problem is just as well as I do.
What are you talking about, Hal?
This mission is too important for me to allow you to jeopardize it.
I don't know what you're talking about, Hal.
I know that you and Frank were planning to disconnect me. And I'm afraid that's something I cannot allow to happen.
Where the hell did you get that idea, Hal?
Dave, although you took very thorough precautions in the pod against my hearing you, I could see your lips move.
Hal, I won't argue with you anymore. Open the doors.
Dave, this conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.
Hal? 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 Hal?
Are you guys both familiar with Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey?
Vaguely.
Yeah.
You've seen the film,
yes,
Sean?
In film school, but like I said, film school was in 1990.
Exactly.
But you're not a big fan of science fiction, you told me.
No, I am definitely not. And that, again, goes back to my father. After dinner, I wanted to watch television, and he always had Star Trek on. And I'm like, I can't stand this stuff, and so I have this mental block when it comes to sci-fi. The more exposition that I have to buy into in the story, the less I am likely to enjoy it. If I have to learn a whole new language and a whole new map and a whole new place and a whole new vocabulary, I'm not interested because I can't follow the story. I can't remember all that stuff.
Juwan, you like fantasy. You're a Spielberg fan. Kubrick. Do you think that Kubrick was onto something when he showed us a computer? Well, the onboard computer, HAL 9000, becoming self-aware and starting to attack human beings. You're the techie in the room here. Are you afraid? Are you afraid of technology becoming sentient and attacking humans?
Afraid? No. The evolution, we created technology. Technology is here to help us, you know, not to replace us. So AI is a way of pretty much making things easier so we can actually focus on something that really we enjoy. You know, for example, AI right now, for me, that I work in graphics, it makes things simpler to me. I can code something that I don't do, but I have an AI assistant that actually can, I ask what I need to do, and create a little program that I can put it on my editing software and my graphics software to do things faster.
Well, you did some of our illustrations for the show using AI, I remember.
That too, yeah.
And of course, you put together a nice little song of former President Trump and President Biden having a nice song together. Was that complicated?
No. You take the song that you really need, want to change the singers, and then you just pretty much. And I did it with the phone, not even with the computer. So it was extremely simple. It took me 20 minutes max.
See, I want to bring up artificial intelligence, particularly ChatGPT, because last time we did a finale, we talked a bit about some of the ongoing fears about COVID-19, COVID mandates, ivermectin, lab leak theories. A lot of these things seem to have kind of disappeared into the ether. Even the paranoid people are not talking about those that much. But over the last year, particularly in the world of education, so since Sean's also a teacher, has ChatGPT changed the way you teach? Are you afraid of how it's going to affect our ability to impart knowledge to our students?
I am not, but I will tell you, within the past, year or two, I have had students turn in stuff, that is clearly, nothing like the other assignments that they had turned in.
Exactly.
But I try and tell my students, I'm like, yes, I'm like, you can punch into ChatGPT, hey, give me a 500 word movie review on blah 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 blah, for my film history course. But it's challenged me in a way to make students write more personally, and artificial intelligence is not going to do that. They're going to, cull together all of the reviews about said film and, make a fluff piece that pretty much skims the surface and never dives the material. So I find myself making a syllabus that is more personal to the student, and ChatGPT is not going to know how you experienced a film. And so I just incorporate stuff like that into my assignments. I have not used ChatGPT for my teaching. That is something that is currently being introduced in our school in terms of, lesson planning and designing things. I don't think the ChatGPT is necessarily a bad thing to like create a unit of study on something. And you can definitely use that as a basis, as a rough draft, and go back and modify it and stuff like that. Like John said, you can use it, for certain things and make certain things easier. There's no reason for us to re-chisel a wheel. We have a wheel and it exists for a reason, and let's use it, So we can use ChatGPT. But as far as back to your original question about AI, or am I afraid of AI? Do I ever see a time when AI is going to take over? If I had to pick a film, my favorite film about AI, it would definitely be The Social Dilemma. I don't know if you watch, have you watched that documentary film?
I did, but I don't remember it for some
It
reason.
came out in 2022, and it's all about the engineers behind Google and Facebook, and
Oh, the algorithms.
it's the algorithms, and if you think about it, it's the algorithms that are responsible for this conspiracy theory bullcrap, that we deal with on a regular basis. Because back in the day, if you typed in Sandy Hook hoax, into the YouTube search bar, I mean, you could sit in that rabbit hole for the next month and not even come close to watching half the videos that were on there claiming that Sandy Hook was a hoax. And it was all fodder for Alex Jones and InfoWars. Now they wised up a little bit and they changed that algorithm somewhat, but they really, really did, through that algorithm, manipulate the public. I mean, look at how, QAnon spiked, 600, 700%.
It reinforces your own biases.
Yeah, it reinforces your own.
That's the YouTube algorithm. Yeah.
You're exactly right. And that's the thing that scares the crap out of me when it comes to when it comes to AI, you know, because you can create these tiny little echo chambers where I'm only going to be online and sharing the opinion of stuff that I already believe, and I'm never going to be challenged, you know, and I think that that's dangerous. Like, that just breeds more ignorance.
I wouldn't say that I'm fearful, but I have to say that I've been quite apprehensive, and that's just because I'm not a techie person. I rely on friends and colleagues often to explain to me how to use the hardware, because I'm so busy trying to find information to explain how the world works. I don't want to spend it policing or having to figure out a software that will help me pass that information on to someone else. So for someone like me who's not technologically savvy, it does seem like an incredible nuisance, if not a direct attack, on my ability to do my job and to teach students. Now, it may be that using term papers is not the way to go in the future, but it feels like, you know, I'm this like old school Protestant. I've read Amusing Ourselves to Death by Neil Postman. You know, I do believe the written word fosters thinking and careful, slow thinking much more than sound bites and videos and things like that. So I am definitely apprehensive. I've learned to use more oral presentations in class, for example, but it's time consuming, right? So sometimes I'm not sure if it's because I'm afraid of what it does, or I'm more annoyed by the fact that it screws around something that seemed to work fairly well, which was the traditional college approach to teaching. You know, you have lectures, you have term papers, you have in-class essays. It just seemed to me like a little too much.
See, I think your problem, Michel, is control. You want to control your students.
I do.
And the best way is doing oral presentations. That's quality education. You can see them, how they think, the talk. Like Nico, is my son, is really doing oral presentations every single week. They're pushing it because, yeah, exactly. All the Google Classroom stuff can be, you know, tainted with anything taken from the internet. Yeah.
It's good. The problem is it's really time consuming in class. In the past, you could assign papers, you bring a stack home, and you have all like the Christmas vacation to mark them. But now at least they have 8 minutes or whatever, depending on the class. They have like 5 to 8 minutes to do their spiel. And if they can't cover it then, too bad. You know, I'm not bringing all those papers home. So there is an advantage to doing that, but we have to be more creative. But I did have a good experience as I was trying to put together a new version of our theme song for our podcast. Last year, I performed with Joanne and Matthew. I don't know if it was any good, but it's sort of a 1990s unplugged grunge version of the Paranoid Planet theme song. And this time, I actually just punched around for a beatbox generator, and a couple websites popped up. And this thing called Incredibox showed up. I'm not trying to make an advertisement here. They're not going to give me any money.
Well, if they want to, good for it.
Well, they can. But if I want to show you what I created, I have to acknowledge, exactly, that's what it says on their website, that I actually use their technology. So I found this thing that generated a great deal of music, beatbox and other types of things. And then I put in our lyrics in there, and then I put some of our friends like Alex Jones and Jesse Ventura and Donald Trump in there. And it produced the result that you guys have heard. So I don't know if I should play it now or at the end of the episode. But at least I figure sometimes machines do help us have a little bit of fun, and they help us hone in skills that we don't actually have on our own.
But look, it just helps you to resolve a problem, a little bit of a content that you wanted to create. There you go. You see?
What would I have done?
Yeah.
I would have done a legitimate investigation to find out what exactly happened on 9/11. How did they know who did this so quickly like they did Lee Harvey Oswald?
They've taken everybody's guns but the Swiss and the American people. And when they get our guns, they can have their world tyranny. Hitler took the guns. Stalin took the guns. Mao took the guns.
Have you recently had a close encounter? Close encounter with something very unusual.
Who are you people?
Devils all around me. Suspicious lights in the sky. Elections rigged by the oligarchy. Official stories a lie.
felt compelled to be here?
Yeah, you might say that. Qu'est-ce que vous trouvez?
What did you expect to find?
An answer.
That's not crazy, is it?
9/11 was an inside job. Lee Harvey Oswald was a patsy. Lady Di, a victim of assassination, planned by the Queen and Illuminati. They say we live on a paranoid planet where everything is not as it seems. The white is black and the leaders are looters. Gotta wake up from this terrible dream.
Evil people are going to try to do evil things to us and to others.
Every war fought starts with a false flag operation.
A spy is watching from behind the curtains. An evil genius is pulling the switch. My brain in a vat on board a vegan starship. Those chemical trails are really making me itch.
I don't like them putting chemicals in the water. They turn the friggin' frogs gay.
They say we live on a paranoid planet where everything is not as it seems. Where white is black and the winners are losers. Gotta wake up from this terrible dream.
I'm sick of being social engineered. It's not funny! 1776 will commence again if you try to take our firearms.
An enemy above me, an enemy beneath me, an enemy beside me, an enemy inside me. Enemies lurking inside my house. I grab my Swiss Army knife, prepare for helter skelter. They leap out of the closets and from behind the couch to shower me with concern. But I know better. Shape-shifting lizards, wake me up from this terrible dream.
Without a doubt in my mind, I believe vaccinations trigger Evan's autism. So I think they need to wake up and stop hurting our kids.
What do you think tap water is? It's a gay bomb, baby.
They say we live on a paranoid planet where Terran monkey men are coming for me. Where Hillary feeds on the brains of our children. Please wake me up from this terrible dream. Please, please wake me up from this terrible dream. Please, please, please wake me up from this terrible dream.
There is no such thing as a chemical imbalance. Psychiatry is a pseudoscience.
The evil people will come after this country and there's just going to be chaos. It's going to have mass killing, possibly millions of people.
Silent breed is people!
Nobody knows the system better than me, which is why I alone can fix it.
Mein Lebenskampf ist nicht umsonst gekämpft.
I want to speak to someone in charge. I want to lodge a complaint. What the hell is going on around here? Who are you people?
So anyways, you've heard the theme song. What did you guys think about it? Apart from the schmuck who's singing.
It made it up.
I was a little blown away by it. Who wrote the lyrics?
Sure.
I did.
You did. What's the line with the Swiss Army knife?
Let me find the lyrics here.
I every time I listen to that, you grab your Swiss Army knife and you
prepared. Yes. So okay. So here's the enemies lurking inside my house. I grab my Swiss Army knife, prepared for helter skelter. Right? That's that's a Charles Manson reference.
Manson reference.
They leap out of the closets and from behind the couch to shower me with concern. Now, in the original, it's meant to be a birthday party. Happy birthday! And with one voice saying, you know, we want to help you. You know, we want to, it's like an intervention. But I know better. Now, in this version, I kind of skipped over the happy birthday part. And I have to say that this is not the original lyric. I changed it because it was too violent. The original lyric was, and it's interesting that you brought this up. This is the one part that I had to rewrite. It was, I grabbed my AR-15, prepared for Helter Skelter. Ooh. Now, you have to understand that I'm from Quebec. There's not a lot of gun violence here. If you don't listen to American media, you could believe that gun violence, like school shootings, is something very, very rare. It does happen, but it happens a lot less per capita here. So when I said AR-15, I thought it's kind of a joke of this gun culture in Texas, whatever. But I realized, having watched now a lot of these kind of repeated assaults on civilians, I thought, okay, that's too heavy. It's bothering me to have that image in my mind of turning a machine gun towards your friend and family. So I thought Swiss Army Knife was funnier.
It's a lot funnier. I mean, I remember the first time that I heard that, and it was like, I grabbed my Swiss Army Knife and prepare for Helter Skelter. I mean, one of my favorite Tarantino films is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And, you know, Vincent Bugliosi wrote, Helter Skelter.
Yes, that's right.
And you know, prosecuted the Manson family. So there were all those connections there that I like immediately made. And then I'm sitting there thinking to myself, could they have done Helter Skelter with just a Swiss Army knife? And that's what makes it so funny.
They could have. I think they could have. At least, I mean, there were kitchen knives, I think, for the most part. And again, it's an incredibly gruesome story if ever you read about the Manson murders. But yeah, it does, I guess it brings in a little bit of, what's the word? Like, it's surrealism, right? It just seemed to be ludicrous. Why would you do that? So anyways, thank you for noticing. It was a correction that turned out to maybe make the song a little bit better. Who knows where it's going to go next year? So this one's a bit like a Gangnam style house mix version. So we do want our fans to be able to send us their own versions. Unfortunately, we only had one person who did that so far. And I have to say, that's the one part of the podcast I'm a little bit disappointed with. But I think it's because we don't have like money or merch to give away. Or maybe we just appeal to the untalented. I don't know. Sean, maybe you need to go back to the band, fight that aversion you have of loud noises and ask them to create like a
marching band version.
That's right.
The theme song. that would definitely be it. We do have a music studio in our high school, so that is not out of the realm of possibility. So I have another question about the theme song. So on the website, there's a version of the theme song that's posted on there that sounds like it's being sung by a little green man, like a little alien.
I think that was me accelerated. And then there's another one by, I forget his name, a gentleman who kind of gave us a little bit of like a postmodern William Shatner spoken word version.
Yes. Yeah. I listened to both of those.
Okay. Oh, great. That's awesome.
I listened to both of them.
I would like to have that entire webpage filled with different iterations. You know, my son and I seriously considered asking Rhett and Link to do a version. Are you familiar with Rhett and Link? They're like these internet celebrities, and they eat a whole bunch of garbage and throw up in garbage cans, and they do these contests. Like, you know, it's like shoving M&Ms up your nose or, trying to guess which Doritos brand is real and which one's a knockoff. It's kind of silly, but it's quite funny. And they do a lot of like their own original silly songs, a bit like Weird Al Yankovic type of things.
Okay.
And they do music videos. So Rhett and Link, if you're out there, if you're listening to Paranoid Planet, we'd love to have you respond. I couldn't find your email, so I don't know how to write snail mail anymore. Nobody does that. Okay, so let's move on to the crowning achievement of the evening. Are you ready?
Yes.
Go for it.
I saw you with the box. What was in the box?
Because I envy your normal life.
Put the gun down, David.
It seems that envy is my sin.
Oh, what's in the box?
Chapter 4, Movie Maker Trivia Deathmatch, Spielberg versus Fincher Edition.
Oh, boy.
Right, gentlemen, welcome to our own particular version of the Fight Club. What I have for you today is two lists of film quotes from your favorite movie directors. You will take it in turns to respond with the title of the film, the date it was released,
ooh,
and, if you know it, the name of the movie character who spoke it. Each of these answers is worth 1 point. If you cannot answer or get it wrong, your opponent can steal the points by answering correctly. Okay, so you each have 10 questions. Each question is a quote from a film. You might know the title, you may know the date, and if you're a real fan, you should know the character who said it. If you say the actor, I might accept it, but I'd rather have the name of the character. So there are 60 points up for grabs. That means you need 31 points to ensure a victory. It's a bit like those Republican primaries. You need to have over 50% to be sure. Because there are three people playing here. There's our David Fincher fan, Sean Gaston. There is our Steven Spielberg fan, Joan Lijo. And there's the house. I'm the one who made the game. So, like in most casinos, the house usually wins.
Joanne, I think the house is going to destroy
absolutely
us.
Absolutely. Because when you said the year, okay.
Yeah, I'm done. Like, how? Like the house is going to get at least 1 point out of every question
and
that's
plus,
asked.
Probably 50% of the movies, I saw them 2 years later.
In Spanish.
Exactly.
And I right had a traumatic brain injury in 2018, so I don't remember anything. I don't even remember who you people are.
It's my it's my casino. I get to set okay the rules. Okay. So, but there's another twist here.
Uh-oh.
There's a catch. Your opponent will get first dibs at answering the questions about your favorite director's films. Then we'll know whether or not you are a genuine superfan or just a schmuck who claims to be one. And if the house wins, I'll be celebrated forever as a movie quiz-making genius. Are there any questions?
No.
Okay. All right. So you each get a list of quotes. We'll go back and forth. Well, I guess we'll start with Sean because he's our invité here. So the winner will get to wield. You guys were emailing me today about who gets to win what. The winner will get to wield the Knitter's, that's our secret society, the Knitter's mighty scepter of fictional knowledge. Okay. So it's an added bonus. And that weighs a lot in the secret society. The runner-up will receive a lifetime supply of an oxygen-nitrogen-carbon dioxide solution, also known as air, and it's very useful for staying alive. And the loser will receive a soiled cardboard box teeming with flies containing a variety of severed human body parts. And that is a film reference as well.
Seven.
What's in the box, you ask? What's in the box? Okay, that's why it's not going to be on the list. All right. Finally, since we are remote, I also need to see your hands, so you can't cheat and look it up. I don't want you guys like Googling or asking ChatGPT, okay? 25 years of teaching have taught me not to trust anyone. All right, so.
Joy.
So if your hands are within.
We are ready. We are ready.
You guys
we're
are ready.
Ready.
Okay.
Ready.
Sean, here's your first quote. Remember, you're getting first dibs at the Spielberg questions, and then Joanne can steal.
Wait, so you're not going to ask me Fincher questions?
Well, you can answer his Fincher questions, the one he doesn't get.
Okay. All right.
Trust me, he's gonna let a few through. Okay. He has a very large net. Okay.
All right.
Number one, you're gonna need a bigger boat. Sean.
Jaws.
Jaws. That's very good. Can you tell the year?
1975.
Bam! Wow, 2 points. Can you tell which character said this?
Was it Brody?
Oh, three. Skunked, Joanne.
Martin Brody.
Joanne, you get no leftover.
Hey, but who was Martin Brody?
Chief Martin Brody. He was the. Tell us.
No.
He does. Well, that's the name of the character. But we could say that he's the guy who basically he's the shark killer.
Excellent. No.
He's the shark killer.
He's not a shark killer.
Yeah. It's not.
No. Quinn.
No.
Oh no. That's right. He's the.
Yeah.
That's
he's
right.
The
Quinn.
He tried.
Shark.
He's the shark expert.
He's the chief of police, right? He's the chief of police from Martha's Vineyard, exactly. Who actually does kill the shark at the end. Right, okay.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
That's right.
Does he say you're going to need a bigger boat or we're going to need a bigger boat?
You're going to need, yeah.
Okay.
He's talking to Quint about it. Yeah.
I got these from IMDb, and IMDb is never wrong.
Okay. Yeah.
Juan, your turn. Yeah. Here's your quote. I visited your home this morning after you'd left. I tried to play husband. I tried to taste the life of a simple man. It didn't work out, so I took a souvenir, her pretty head.
Zodiac?
No.
No idea.
You don't know the year or the character?
No.
Oh, Sean for the steal.
This is not fair. It's my favorite Fincher film, Joanne. Yeah. That is from Seven. That is Kevin Spacey.
Okay. Wow.
And it was released my senior year of high school, 1995.
That's a fantastic movie. It's a fantastic movie.
Now, Kevin Spacey was playing the role of?
John Doe.
Bam. 6 points. 6-0-0. Yeah. I got zero.
Do you know that Fincher purposely kept his name out of the opening credits to the film because he didn't want to give away who the killer was?
Was he already famous at that time, Kevin Spacey?
Oh, yeah. Way famous. Yeah. I mean, he was, Usual Suspects.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Know. That's right. Yeah.
Kaiser
Sose.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. But of course, that's a singer. That's a singer film. Okay, Sean, number two. Give me the idol. I'll throw you the whip.
That is Indiana Jones. Raiders of the Lost Ark.
The film is correct? The film title is correct. The character is not. Do you want to guess the year?
Oh, God, when did Indiana Jones come out?
If it helps you, I was in grade 6.
That does not help me. 1985.
No. Juan for the steal.
1980.
So close.
One.
Yes. No, I'll give you the point. 1981. Out of pity, I give you the point. Now, do you remember the name of this character? At least you can tell me what he does or who he is.
Okay, repeat it.
Give me the idol. I'll throw you the whip.
Oh, I think I know now.
Don't tell me that's the... Give me the idol.
It's very early in the movie, before a big rock comes rolling down.
Oh, well, I know the actor, man. It's an Indian guy. But I know the... I don't know the name of...
His name was... It's Satipo. Okay, that's fine. But I'll give you the point because you knew who he was in the movie. You got the date wrong. It's 1981, so 1 point for the house. Okay, Juan, number two.
What's the score?
Oh, we'll tell you at the end. You don't want to know.
Oh, okay, all right.
You're comfortable. You're like Trump. You're like Trump in New Hampshire right now.
We're only three questions in.
Not even. Okay, Juan, you're not your job. You're not how much money you have in the bank. You're not the car you drive. You're not the contents of your wallet. You're not your effing khakis. You're the all-singing, all-dancing crap of the world.
Oh, that's a Fight Club.
Fight Club, bam. 1999.
Okay.
1999. And which character?
I don't know. The names of the character. Oh, you killed me.
Really?
Yeah.
Come on. It's the most important character.
Well, Brad Pitt.
Can I steal it?
Hold on. Okay. You have the actor, right?
Exactly. Tony the name, no.
Okay, I did say actor earlier. I'll accept Brad Pitt, but the character's name, Sean, is?
Tyler Durden,
okay. All right, number three. Your scientists were so preoccupied with whether or not they could, they didn't stop to think if they should.
Jurassic Park?
Yes.
I don't know the year. 1990?
Is the year I started dating Julie.
Come on.
I took her to this movie and we ate, no, I ate an entire box of Felix and Norton cookies, which is essentially just a pound of butter.
I do not know the year Jurassic Park came out, so I'm just going to take a shot in the dark. 1993.
Bow! That's good.
Really?
Yes.
Nice.
Yes.
And
character or actor?
Oh, God. Was it the guy who does those commercials on television for that apartment complex? I cannot remember what his name is right now off the top of my head, but I can picture him in my head. Dark hair.
Joanne, you want to try?
Dr. Ian Malcolm. Jeff Goldblum.
Yes, congratulations.
Who's the actor?
Jeff Goldblum.
That's right. Yeah, couldn't think of his name. I got 2 points out of that.
Yes, that's pretty good. Joanne, this is the dialogue, by the way. Are you going to spend the rest of the evening prying at that clown's mouth? You can see me? Let's save the questions till afterwards. How does this work? There's a tiny camera looking at you right now. That's impossible. You're right. Impossible. You're having a conversation with your television.
A guy talking to the television.
Fiddling in a clown's mouth. And I'll give you a hint. It's his birthday. And this is all part of his present.
No idea.
You think you know this, Sean?
I don't.
You don't? It's one of my favorite Fincher films.
One of your favorite Fincher films? Yes.
Social Network?
Nope.
I don't know.
That's what I would have guessed. I don't know, dude.
Ooh, it looks like 3 points for the house. So the movie is The Game.
Ah.
1997.
Okay. Yeah.
The character is Nicholas Van Orton, or if you prefer, it's Michael Douglas. Michael Douglas.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, Joanne. No, Sean.
Mm-hmm. Okay, go ahead.
You can't tell. Not even mom. Why not? Because grown-ups can't see him. Only little kids can see him.
E.T.?
Yes.
And is it Drew Barrymore?
Ooh, no.
Was she in? She was the one who he was talking to.
You know what? She does say, because there is the why not. Yes.
Yes. So Elliot is talking to Drew Barrymore.
Yes.
And as far as the date goes, when was E.T. released? 1983.
Close. Joanne for the steal.
Indiana Jones and E.T. are super close. Yeah, see, it has to be, no, 1982.
82, correct.
Yeah, I said 83. Right,
because there's one and the other, it was two jump of a genre, like from adventure to sci-fi again.
Okay. All right, Joanne. Do you know more people die in the East Bay commute every 3 months than that idiot ever killed? He offed a few citizens. He wrote a few letters, and then he faded into a footnote. Not that I haven't been sitting here idly waiting for you to drop by and reinvigorate my sense of purpose. It was 4 years ago. Let it effing go. Of course, he didn't say effing. He said the full word, but you know, I'm trying to be a good guy.
Yeah, I think that one is the Zodiac.
Yes, Zodiac. Yeah. Congratulations. Year?
Let me see.
You and I went to see this together in the cinema.
So it was 2000.
2000?
No, 2000 and something.
Yeah, but the something matters.
Okay, 2006, 2007. Yeah, just because I like number 7. 2007.
2007, congratulations. That is a point. All right, do you know who said it?
No.
Actors are acceptable here. I don't know if you know the name of the character.
I need to remember the scene, man. No.
Sean, who said that?
Was it Jake Gyllenhaal?
No.
It wasn't?
It was, no, because he was spoken to the Jake Gyllenhaal character.
Oh.
His name was Paul Avery, but it was played by Robert Downey Jr., I believe. So unfortunately, that point has to go to the house. All right, number 5. We're at the halfway mark. This is for Sean. I could have got more out. I could have got more. I don't know if I'd made more money. I threw away so much money. You have no idea. I didn't do enough. This car. Why did I keep the car? 10 people right there. 10 people. 10 more people. This pin. 2 people. This is gold.
I could have answered this when you were 5 words.
All right.
It's Oscar Schindler's List. And it came out, I believe, in 1993.
Wow, perfect score. That's a trifecta.
That's the year the Holocaust Museum opened up.
Oh, okay, Okay, yeah, Holocaust question. Sorry, Joanne.
Liam Neeson.
I love that one to him.
Do you know that scene is all BS, right?
Oh, really?
Never happened.
That was one of my favorite scenes in the movie.
It just to humanize the man. You know?
Yeah, never... Never happened, sorry. That was Steven Spielberg creating the or completing the character arc of Oscar Schindler.
All right, Joanne, it's your turn. Number 5. Nick Dunn took my pride and my dignity and my hope and my money. He took from me until I no longer existed. That's murder. Let the punishment fit the crime. To fake a convincing murder, you have to have discipline. You need to package yourself so that people will truly mourn your loss. And America loves pregnant women. Pregnant woman, faking her own murder because of a guy called Nick Dunn, her husband.
Repeat that, please.
The whole thing?
Yeah. Gone Girl, like, I'm trying to see.
Yes, Gone Girl, point.
But sheesh. Okay, I was thinking something. There's another movie, The Girl with the Dragon
Tattoo.
Okay, yeah. That's not the one.
I had that kind of two girls.
Okay, so Gone Girl, okay. Can you tell me the date? And can you tell me the character or actress?
Wow, 2012.
Close, but no cigar.
13?
Well, you only get one guess. Do you want to pick the actress? I don't know if you'll know that. Well, you might know. It talks about a guy called Nick Dunn.
No idea.
All right, Sean, can you steal that?
Is it Ben Affleck?
Well, if Ben Affleck wanted to, if he compares himself to a pregnant woman, we're in trouble.
Oh, no. Okay. Yeah,
that's it. She said it.
Yeah, I don't know who the actress is.
Okay, so that's for the house. It was Rosamund Pike or Amy Dunn. Do you know the date?
What did Johan say?
2012.
It's later than that.
2014?
2016. I'll go with 2014.
Congratulations. That's a point. So we split
assist. I got an assist on that one.
Yeah, so we each get a point here. We canceled each other's out. Okay, number six. No, yes, number six. Joanne. No, it's Sean. I know this sounds crazy, but ever since yesterday on the road, I've been seeing this shape. Shaving cream. Pillows. Damn it, I know this. I know what this is. This means something. This is important.
I have no idea.
No?
No idea.
No date, no actor? Or no
date, character? No actor, no film.
Jawan, you can get 3 points here.
You get 3 points. There you go.
Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yes.
Oh, there you go.
Richard Dreyfuss. Roy Neary.
Roy Neary, that's right. Year?
Ooh, you killed me. 1979. I can't remember.
1977, point for the house.
The years I'm pretty bad with Spielberg movies. He had made so many.
That is tough.
Now, Joanne, this is your question now. When they first heard about this thing, it was crew expendable. The next time, they sent in the Marines. They were expendable, too. What makes you think they're going to care about a bunch of lifers who found God at the ass end of space?
Ah, that's Alien 3.
Yes, congratulations, ding.
Yeah, because the first one... It was the old man, then Cameron, and then him. Yeah.
And who's the character who says this? It's fairly obvious.
Well, I guess it's Ripley.
Ellen Ripley. That's correct. Second point.
Sigourney Weaver.
Can you pick the date?
That's the 90s. So let's say it's at the beginning of the 90s. 92.
Trifecta. Yeah. Congratulations. Oh, you're narrowing down the lead.
That's good, because I remember, in Chile, I was starting university, yeah.
All right, good for you. And I believe that's the one film that Fincher has disavowed, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's not great because the budget was cut on the special effects, so he had to do a lot of kind of like, a little bit like with Jaws, right? Spielberg had the same problem with Jaws. He had to create tension with lighting.
With a different outcome, of course.
Well, yeah, but I did watch it again. And it's not bad.
No.
I actually think Alien 3 is a lot better. The problem is it didn't live up to what Fincher had on paper, yeah, right?
Absolutely.
It wasn't through hike.
There's always, where the product, there's a production interference, studio interference, directors get kind of their mojo to the floor.
All right. Number seven. This is for Sean. He better be worth it. He better go home and cure a disease or invent a longer lasting light bulb.
Man, I'm getting stumped.
I'm going to give you a clue from the back door. This is actually from your bio on the Through Hike website that I saw today. This is one of your favorite actors.
It's one of my favorite actors.
Well,
from my Through Hike bio?
Yeah.
I haven't looked at the Through Hike bio in 20 years, all right?
It's not your favorite film, but it is your favorite actor, allegedly. And this is close in time, I think, to the other film.
Is it Tom Hanks?
Yes, congratulations.
And so wait, say this again. What's the quote?
He better be worth it. He better go home and cure a disease or invent a longer lasting light bulb.
Tom Hanks said it, and I'm drawing a blank on what the stinking movie is. And this is terrible. I'm going to hand in my film club card.
You might kick yourself. Juan, you know this?
Oh, Saving Private Ryan?
Saving Private Ryan. Oh, my Congratulations.
God. Yeah, there you go.
And the date is?
Come on.
All right, I'll give you a hint, Juan. It lost Best Picture that year to Shakespeare in Love.
Oh, 2001?
No. 1998.
Oh. Yep.
That's a point. That's a point for the house.
I'm always like 2 years, 3 years, kind of out.
That's fine. You're close. Ballpark
Did
it.
Did we all split that one?
Yes. And the house is not doing as well as you guys thought it would. So don't worry too much about it.
There's still a lot of questions left.
There's a few. There's three questions left. If there's a tie, I actually have a bonus question on both sides.
Well, don't ties go to the house?
No, I'm fair. I like to give bonus questions on my tests. Okay. Number seven. Who is this for? This is for Joanne. Okay, so this is a dialogue. One person says, "Would you still love me if I were old and saggy?" The other person says, "Would you still love me if I were young and had acne? When I'm afraid of what's under the stairs, or if I end up wetting the bed?"
That's Benjamin Button.
That's Benjamin Button. Stanley Kubrick would love this date.
2008. No?
Stanley Kubrick would love this date.
2001?
And one, yeah.
Are you sure?
I think Button was, he had it right. I think it's 2001.
Yeah, it's okay. Not 2001.
I don't think it was 01.
To the Google. Okay, well, I have 2001 here, but maybe I misread. I don't know.
Well, check it out.
Feel free, if anybody has a phone, you can check it out, Juan.
Yeah, give me 1 second.
And who was the person? Who were the two people? Or at least one of the two? The one getting old, the one getting younger?
Brad Pitt.
Huh?
Benjamin Button, yes. Or Daisy and what's her name? Kate Blanchett. Okay, all right, so we got that. Now,
I got it, 2008.
2008, yeah. Oh, okay.
I was right.
And what did you say 2008?
Yes, okay. Recorded.
It's recorded.
All right, I'll give that to you. All right, where are we at? Number nine. No, number eight. And this is for Sean. Mr. Marks, by mandate of the District of Columbia Pre-Crime Division, I'm placing you under arrest for the future murder of Sarah Marks and Donald Dubin that was to take place today, April 22nd, at 0800 hours and 4 minutes.
That is Tom Cruise.
Yes. The character's name is John Anderton, but I'll accept Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise, is it Minority Report?
Yes, it is. Can you guess the date?
Oh, God, no. So I will guess that. I'll try to guess the date. I'm going to say 1999.
Close, but wrong. Juan?
98.
2002. Point for the house. Point for the house.
There we go.
Yeah, I saw that one. Yeah, that one.
All right, this is for Juan. Now, this is a longer one, but it is not a dialogue. Once you can... There's two people involved, but it's not a dialogue. Once you can sit again, which could be a while, I admit, we're going to go to my bank and tell them that I alone have access to my money. Nod. After that, you will never contact me again. I'm taking the keys to this apartment because I'll be checking on you. And if I find a girl in here with you, whether she came of her own free will or not, I'll kill you. Do you doubt anything I've said? Do you doubt what's in the reports that have followed me around all my life? What do they say? If you had to sum it up, they say I'm insane. You can nod now because it's true. I am insane.
The last movie I saw of this guy was The Killer, but it's not that one.
Well, I'll give you a hint. You've actually mentioned this film earlier.
The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. That is correct. Yes. Can you tell me the character and the year?
Has to be around there. Let me see. To 2011. 2011? I don't know the actor. No.
2011. Congratulations. 2011. Okay. Well, I don't know the actress either, but the character I know here. But maybe Sean knows the actress.
I don't know the actress. No.
Do you know the name of the character?
No.
Okay, point for the house. The character's name is Lisbeth Salander.
Yeah, that's it.
Lisbeth.
Lisbeth Salander. I forget the name of the actress. It's not Noomi Rapace, but Noomi Rapace was in the Swedish version of the film.
Exactly.
I remember watching that on Netflix with subtitles.
Alrighty.
All right, number nine. Number nine? This is for Sean. She does not love you, David. She cannot love you. You are
Rooney Mara.
What?
The actress is Rooney Mara.
Okay, but the question is over. All right. That's great. That's great. It's for next year. Keep it for next year.
Okay.
All right, let me start that again. Sean, she does not love you, David. She cannot love you. You are neither flesh nor blood. You are not a dog, a cat, or a canary. You were designed and built specific like the rest of us. They made us too smart, too quick, and too many. We are suffering for the mistakes they made because when the end comes, all that will be left is us. That's why they hate us.
Great movie. Great movie. I wanted to watch it again.
Is it AI?
It is AI. Congratulations. Character and date.
My lord. I am terrible with these. I will tell you, when I was told to study, I studied Fincher films.
This is the year that Kubrick died, remember? This is a movie that Stanley Kubrick could not finish.
Eyes Wide Shut?
Ooh.
He did Eyes Wide Shut before he did this movie, but this is not... Oh. Remember, these are Spielberg movies, not Kubrick movies.
No, I know that. I'm just... The year he... Well, no. I guess they released... They finished Eyes Wide Shut after he died and released it. Well, let's see. AI. Was Haley Joel Osment in that movie?
The kid.
He's in the scene, but he's not the one speaking.
Okay. I'm not going to know who the character is then that's speaking, or the actor who's speaking it. And again, I'm just going to take a shot in the dark with the date and say 2002.
Oh, close. Juan?
One, yeah.
2001. Certainly. And character or actor?
Gigolo Joe.
Gigolo Joe.
There you go.
Right. Played by
Jude Law.
Jude Law, that's right. All right, we're getting close to the end. Joanne, if your clients want to sit on my shoulders and call themselves tall, they have the right to give it a try. Do you know it already? But there's no requirement that I enjoy sitting here listening to people lie.
That's the social
network. Do you want me to finish the quote?
Yeah, sure. Go for it. He was pissed.
You have part of my attention. You have the minimum amount. The rest of my attention is back at the office, where my colleagues and I are doing things that no one in this room, including especially your clients, are intellectually or creatively capable of doing. All right, so this is The Social Network. Who is speaking?
Mark Zuckerberg.
Mark Zuckerberg, that's right. The year?
When I asked you the year. When I said the Girl Dragon Tattoo, you said this, I said 2011. This one is before.
Just before.
2010?
Good. I'll give it to you. I think I gave you a little bit of a push there. I'm wondering if it's going to be a tie. This is actually getting pretty close. All right. Last question for Sean. I'm poor, black, I may even be ugly, but dear God, I'm here.
Amazing.
That is not West Side Story. Stop trying to bait me into a wrong answer. Is that... The Color Purple?
It is. Congratulations.
Damn. And is that Oprah Winfrey?
No, it is not Oprah Winfrey, nor her character.
Is it?
Can you tell me the year?
No. I'm going to take a guess. I'm going to say 1989.
Oh, no. No. Joanne Steele?
No, it's not Oprah Winfrey. It's the... what's the other lady?
The crazier one.
I think I know what it is now.
The crazy one. No.
The crazy one.
9/11 was an inside job.
Yeah, exactly.
Who?
What? I said 9/11 was an inside job.
Oh. Whoopi Goldberg. Whoopi.
Yep.
Whoopi Goldberg.
Yep.
And the year is?
1999.
Oh, no. Point for the house.
88.
1985.
No, I knew it was the 80s.
Shall I tabulate these points, gentlemen?
Go for it.
Sean got off to a roaring start with 6 points in the first question. 20 for Sean. 27 for Joanne.
Oh, man.
I think I lobbed a few easy ones. And the house racked up on measly 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 11 points for the house. So you know what happens?
We did well.
When you win in a casino by such a margins, we take you to the back and we beat you up.
Nice.
Hey, wait a minute. Did I miss a question? I missed a question. Yeah, there's one question left.
It doesn't matter. It's for Juwan. And it's...
Let's say double. Let's say these points count for double.
It's still his question. He starts.
Yeah, but he might get none of it.
Yeah, exactly.
This is true. Okay, all right.
All right. If you can get all these, Sean, and he doesn't get any, you could actually win.
I don't know about that. All right, we'll try. Go ahead.
All right. Now, you have to think a little bit off the beaten track here. For those of us climbing to the top of the food chain, there can be no mercy. There is but one rule, hunt or be hunted.
Hmm.
I'd like to give a hint, but I don't want to give anything away.
No.
It's a movie.
I'm not answering that question.
If I get a chance, I'm going to get 2 out of 3 and fall short.
Sorry, but this was Fincher or was Spielberg?
It is Fincher.
It's Kubrick. It's Sofia Coppola.
Yeah, but we haven't talked about. We talked about Seven already. We talked about Social Network. Are you repeating some movies? No.
No. But I may not be talking about a movie.
A documentary? Oh, repeat, please, because maybe it's a movie.
For those of us climbing to the top of the food chain, there can be no mercy. There is but one rule, hunt or be hunted.
Okay. I'm just taking it by Mank. Mank?
Huh?
Mank. The movie Mank.
I don't know what that is. Mank. I haven't seen that one.
No clue.
No, sorry.
No clue.
Okay. Sean, let's see what you got.
So I am going to guess Killer.
Oh, the last one? Come on.
The last one, Killer, 2023, but it's not. Because he made a face.
It's not.
What is it?
It's not. It is House of Cards.
Ah, come on.
Come on. That's a TV show.
Exactly.
No. Yeah, but it's Fincher. It's Fincher. To be perfectly frank, I hadn't seen Mank or Killer, so I wasn't able to know exactly what was a good line there. Okay. So I picked House of Cards. I thought you might know
it's
it.
Spacey.
By Majority Housewhip Frank Underwood, played by Kevin Spacey.
Yes.
And any date between 2013 and 2018 would have been acceptable. All right. So there you go. Right. 3 points for the house, since double points, 6.
Oh, I thought we're talking about movies. No, to be sure.
I thought we were talking about movies too. It was a curveball, but whatever.
That was dirty, Michelle. That was dirty.
It's that kind of casino. It's that kind of casino. All right, gentlemen, you've been good sports, and let's end with an awards ceremony. As you may know, we have a secret society called the Ancient and Accepted Order of Speculative Haberdashery, better known as the Knitters, through which we secretly rule the world. For your appearance on this program as a co-host, Sean, and for your determination to read through all 26 volumes of the Warren Commission's depositions, evidence, and exhibits, or have some malleable students read it for you, you have been given a rapid ascension up the ranks of the Reptoid hierarchy to join the Council of Grand Poobahs, with the venerable title of Archivist of Secret Murders and Mind Control for our Psychological Warfare Division. Congratulations, you are now a knitter, a reptoid, and a rather powerful minion in our emerging New World Order.
Nice.
Bravo.
Sean Gaston, thank you for coming on to our show.
Thank you for having me. This was a ton of fun.
That is the end of episode 8 and season 2 of the Paranoid Planet podcast. It was brought to you by the letter G, a horror movie no one will ever see, a spaceship that became self-aware and murderous, a health supplement that tastes a lot like dog food, and a bottomless pit of Kennedy assassination speculation. Don't forget that you can support Paranoid Planet with one-time or monthly donations by clicking on the link in our show notes and on our homepage. And please tell your friends, loved ones, and at least one complete stranger about our show. Leave us a rating and a review on your podcast service. Send us your questions and comments at paranoidplanet.mail@gmail.com. And check out the stuff on our website, like our theme song contest, illustrated blog articles and episode art, links to the documents discussed in our episodes, and maybe a list of the 12 best locations to film an amateur horror movie or hide from the coming robot apocalypse. On behalf of Joan Lijo and today's guest co-host, Sean Gaston, this is Michel Gagné saying, killing people is bad. It's just bad. Please don't do it. This program is a Burden of Proof Media production. We'll see you next time.
Paranoid Planet, a podcast about conspiracies, paradigm shift, and critical thinking.
Happy trails to you. Again,
happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds if we're together?
Just sing a song and bring the Saudi weather.
Happy trails to you. Here we meet again.
Some trails are happy ones, others are blue.
It's the way you ride that trail that counts. Here's a happy one for you.
Happy trails to you
until we meet again.
Happy trails. Cares about the clouds if we're together. Just sing a song and bring the sunny weather.
Happy trails to you. Tell me meet again. Happy trails.
That was really a productive segment, wasn't it?
It's a disaster.
Maybe you could inject some bleach in your arm, and that would take care of it.
You graduated the lowest in your class. Don't ever use the word smart with me.
Oh, give me a break.
Because you know what? There's nothing smart about you, Joe. He will destroy this country.
He would know a suburb unless he took a wrong turn.
Oh, I know suburbs.
He would. Will you shut up, man?
Listen, are you in favor of law and order?
I'm in favor of law, you liar.
Your party wants to go socialist medicine.
My party is
and
me.
Socialist
right
healthcare.
Now, I am
and
the
they're going to dominate
party.
You, Joe. You know that.
I am the Democratic Party right now.